Osho, a bird on the wing, talks on Zen. Discourse number 10, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Once, Buddha was to give a special talk one day, and thousands of followers had come from miles around. When Buddha appeared, he was holding a flower. Time passed, but Buddha said nothing. He just looked at the flower. The crowd grew less restless, but Mahakasya, who could restrain himself no longer, he laughed. Buddha beckoned him over and handed him the flower and said to the crowd, I have the eye of a true teacher. All that can be given with words, I have given to you. But with this flower, I give to Mahakasya the key to this teaching.
The key to all teaching, not only of Buddha, but of all masters, Jesus, Mahavir, Lao Tse. The key cannot be given through verbal communication. The key cannot be delivered through mind. Nothing can be said about it. The more you say, the more it becomes difficult to deliver it. Because a Buddha and you live in such different dimensions, not only different, but diametrically opposite, that whatsoever Buddha says will be misunderstood. I have heard one evening three slightly deaf women met on the road. The day was very windy. So one woman said, windy, isn't it? The other said, Wednesday? No, it is Thursday. The third said, thirsty? I am also. So let us go to the restaurant and have a cup of tea. This is what happens when a Buddha says something to you. He says, windy, you say, Wednesday? No, it is Thursday. The physical ear is okay, but the spiritual ear is missing. A Buddha can talk only to another Buddha. This is the problem. But with another Buddha, there is no need to talk. Buddha has to talk to those who are not enlightened. There exists the need to talk and communicate. But then, communication is impossible. It is reported of one Mohammedan saint, Farid, that he was passing near Banaras, where Kabir lived. Followers of Farid said, it would be just wonderful if you and Kabir meet. For us, it will be a blessing. The same happened to Kabir and his followers. They heard that Farid is passing. So they requested Kabir that it will be good if we request Farid to stay for a few days in the ashram, you both talking. It will be a great opportunity for us. We would like to hear what two enlightened persons talk to each other. Farid laughed when the disciple said this. He said, meeting will be there, but I don't think that there is going to be any talking. But let us see. Kabir said, request Farid and let him come and stay. But whosoever speaks first will prove that he is not enlightened. Farid came, Kabir received him. They laughed, they embraced each other. They sat in silence. 2 days Farid was there. Many hours they will sit together. And the disciples, restless, waiting, they should say something, they should utter something. But not a single word was communicated. The third day Farid left. Kabir came to see him off. They again laughed, embraced each other, departed. The moment they departed, Farid's disciples gathered Farid and said, what nonsense, what wastage of time. And we were hoping that something is going to happen. Nothing happened. Why suddenly you became so dumb? You talk too much to us. Farid said, all that I know, he knows also. Nothing is to be said. I looked into his eyes. He is there where I am. Whatsoever he has seen, I have seen. Whatsoever he has realized, I have realized. Nothing is to be said. Two ignorant persons can talk. They talk much. They nothing do except then talk. Two enlightened persons cannot talk. It will be absurd. Two ignorant persons talking is meaningless because there is nothing to convey. They don't know anything that can be said, that should be said. But they go on talking. Their chattering is just a mad catharsis. They cannot help it. It is a release. Two enlightened persons cannot talk because they know the same. Nothing is to be said. Only one enlightened person and one unenlightened person can have a meaningful communication because one knows and another is yet in ignorance. A meaningful communication, I don't say that the truth can be conveyed, but some hints, some indications, some gestures, so that the other becomes ready to take the jump. The truth cannot be conveyed, but the thirst can be given. No teaching worth the name can give the key through words. Buddha talked. It is difficult to find another person who talked so much. All the scriptures that are in existence in the name of Buddha, scholars have been studying, and they said this seems impossible, because after his enlightenment, only 40 years he was alive, walking from one village to another. He walked all over Bihar. The name Bihar comes because Buddha walked there. Bihar means the walking paths of Buddha. The whole province is called Bihar because this is the boundary where Buddha walked. his Bihar, his wanderings. So continuously on walk, only in rainy seasons he will rest. So much time was wasted in walking. Then he had to sleep. Scholars have been calculating, they say this seems impossible. Sleeping, walking, doing other daily routine things. How can he talk so much? So many scriptures are there. They say if he was continuously talking for 40 years, without a single gap of a single moment, only then this much can be talked. He must have talked too much, continuously. And still he says that the key cannot be conveyed through words. This story is one of the most significant ones, because from this story starts the tradition of Zen. Mahakashyap is the first master of Zen. Buddha is the source. Mahakashyap is the first original master of Zen. And this story is the source from where the whole tradition, one of the most beautiful that exists on earth, one of the most alive, the tradition of Zen started. Try to understand this story. Buddha came one day morning. As usual, a crowd has gathered. Many people are waiting to listen to him. But one thing was unusual. He was carrying a flower in his hand. Never before he had carried anything in his hand. But people thought somebody may have presented it. Buddha came. He sat under the tree. The crowd waited and waited and waited, and he would not speak. He even wouldn't look at them. He just went on looking at the flowers. Minutes passed, and then hours. Then people became too much restless. It is said Mahakashyap couldn't contain him. He laughed loudly. Buddha called him, gave him the flower, and said to the gathered crowd that whatsoever that can be said through words, I have said to you. And that which cannot be said through words, I give it to Mahakashyap. The key cannot be communicated verbally. I hand over the key to Mahakashyap. This is what Zen masters call transference of the key without scripture, beyond scripture, beyond words, beyond mind. He gave the flower to Mahakashyap. Nobody could understand what has happened. Neither Mahakashyap ever commented upon it, nor Buddha again. The whole chapter was closed. Since then, in China, in Tibet, in Thailand, in Burma, in Japan, in Ceylon, everywhere, Buddhists have been asking for these 25 centuries, what was given to Mahakashyap? What was the key? The whole story seems to be very esoteric. Buddha is not secretive. This is the only incidence. Buddha is a very rational being. He talks rationally. He is not a mad ecstatic. He argues rationally. His argument, his logic is perfect. You cannot find a loophole. This is the only incident where he behaved illogically. Where he did something which is mysterious. He is not a mysterious man at all. You cannot find another master who was less mysterious. Jesus is very mysterious. Lao Tse, absolutely mysterious. Buddha is plain, transparent, no mystery around him. No smoke is allowed. His flame burns clear and clear and absolutely transparent, smokeless. This is the only thing that seems mysterious. Hence, many Buddhist scriptures never relate this anecdote. They have simply dropped it. It seems as if someone has invented it. It doesn't make any sense with Buddha's life and attitude. But for Zen, this is the origin. Mahakashyap became the first holder of the key. Then six holders in succession existed in India up to Bodhidharma. Bodhidharma was the sixth holder of the key. And then he searched and searched all over India and he couldn't find a man of the capability of Mahakashyap. A man who could understand silence. He had to leave India. Just in search for a man to whom the key can be given, otherwise the key will be lost. Buddhism entered China with Bodhidharma in search of a man to whom the key can be given. Who can understand silence? Who can talk heart to heart? Who is not obsessed in the mind, who has no head, a man without head. It was difficult to find in India, because India is a country of pandits, scholars. They have the biggest heads possible. A pandit by and by forgets everything about the heart. He becomes the head. His whole personality becomes lopsided. As if only the head exists and the whole body shrinks and disappears. And this communication beyond words is possible only from heart to heart. So Bodhidharma searched in China for 9 years. Then he could find one man. For 9 years Bodhidharma was sitting in China, not facing people. He will always sit facing the wall. If you had gone to hear him, he will be sitting facing the wall back towards you. And people used to ask Bodhidharma, why you sit in such a peculiar way? We have come to listen to you. And Bodhidharma will say, I am waiting for the man who can listen to me. And I will not look at you. I will not waste my time. I will look only to the person who can listen to me. Then came a man. He stood behind Bodhidharma. He cut his hand, right hand, and threw it on Bodhidharma and said, "Turn toward this side, otherwise I am going to cut my head." Bodhidharma immediately turned and said, "Right, so you have come? Take this key and relieve me of the burden." The key that was given from Buddha to Mahakashyap, Bodhidharma delivered to this man. The seventh master became a Chinese. And up to now, it has been traveling. The key is still there. Somebody is still holding it. The river has not died. To me, if all the scriptures of Buddha disappear, nothing is lost. Only this anecdote should not disappear. This is the most precious, and the scholars have dropped it out of Buddha's biography. They say this is irrelevant. It is irrelevant. It doesn't fit with Buddha. But I say to you, all that Buddha did was just ordinary. Anybody can do that. This is extraordinary. This is exceptional. Only a Buddha can do this. What happened that morning? Let us try to penetrate in it. Buddha came. He said, he started looking at the flowers. He will not look at people. The flower became the wall. That's what Bodhidharma did. He will look at the wall. He will not look at the people. He will not waste his look. The flower became the wall. The crowd disappeared. Buddha looked and looked at the flower. What he was doing? When Buddha looks at anything, the quality of Buddha's consciousness is transferred. And a flower is one of the most receptive things in the world. Hence, Hindus and Buddhists go on with flowers to put at their master's feet or in the temple. Because a flower can carry something of your consciousness. A flower is a very receptive thing. If you are aware of new researches in the West, then you can understand it. Now they say, plants are more sensitive than you, than men. And a flower is the heart of the plant. The whole being comes into it. Much research is going on in Soviet Russia, in USA, in England, about the sensitivity of the plants. And something unbelievable has been discovered. One scientist was working on plants, how they feel, whether they feel it on anything or not, whether they have emotions or not. So he was sitting with a plant, with electrodes fixed to the plant, just to detect any movement in the inner being of the plant, any sensation, any emotion. And he just thought that if I cut this plant, if I tear down a branch or cut the plant from the half, what will happen? Suddenly the needle that was making the graft jumped. He has not done anything, just a thought that if I cut this plant, the plant became afraid of death. The needle jumped, recorded that the plant is trembling. Even the scientist became scared because he has not done anything. Just a thought and the plant has received it. Plants are telepathic. Then he worked much. Then he worked on long distances. 1,000 miles, the plant is removed. His plant, the plant he has helped to grow, watered, loved, his plant is removed 1,000 miles, and here he thinks against the plant, and there 1,000 miles away, the plant becomes disturbed. And now, scientifically, it can be recorded that his emotions are disturbed. Not only this, if you think to cut one plant, all other plants surrounding the area, they all become emotionally disturbed. Not only that, if someone has cut a plant and he comes into the garden, all the plants become disturbed because this man is not good. And they carry the memory. Whenever this man enters in the garden, the whole garden feels it. An evil person is coming in. Now, few scientists think that plants can be used for telepathic communication because they are more sensitive than a human mind. And few scientists think that plants can be used to receive communication from other planets because our other instruments are not so refined. But in the East it has always been known that a flower is the most receptive thing. When Buddha looked at the flower and continued looking at the flower, something of Buddha was transferred to the flower. Buddha entered the flower. The quality of his being, the alertness, the awareness, the peace, the ecstasy, the inner dance touched the flower. Buddha, looking at the flower, so at ease at home, without any desire, the flower must have danced in its inner being. He looked to transfer something to the flower. One thing to be understood. Only the flower and he existed for a long period of time. The whole world dropped. Only Buddha there and the flower. The flower entered Buddha's being and Buddha entered the flower's being. And then the flower was given to Mahakashyap. It is not just a flower now. It carries Buddhahood. It carries the inner quality of Buddha's being. And why to Mahakashyap? There were other great scholars, 10 great disciples. Mahakashyap is only one. And he is included in the 10 only because of this story, otherwise he was never included. Nothing is known about Mahakashyap much. There were great scholars, Sariputra was there. You cannot find a more keen intellect. Madgalayan was there, a very great scholar. He knew all the Vedas just in the mind, in the memory. Nothing that was ever written was unknown to him. A great logician. In his own right, he had thousands of disciples. And there were others. Ananda was there, Buddha's cousin brother, and for 40 years continuously moving with Buddha. But no, someone who was unknown before, Mahakashyap, suddenly became most important. The whole gestalt changed. Whenever Buddha was speaking, Sariputra was the significant man, because he could understand words more than anybody else. When Buddha was arguing, Modgalayan was the significant man. Nobody thought about Mahakashyap, where he was, where he remained in the crowd. He was just part of the crowd. But when Buddha became silent, the whole gestalt changed. Now Modgalayan and Sariputra are not significant. They simply dropped out of existence, as if they are not there, just became part of the crowd. A new man, Mahakashyap, became most important. A new dimension opened. Everybody was restless, thinking, why Buddha is not speaking? Why he is keeping silent? What is going to happen? And when it will end? They became uncomfortable, restless. Sariputra was not uncomfortable. He was not restless. Really, for the first time, he was at ease with Buddha. For the first time, he was at home with Buddha. When Buddha was talking, he may have been restless. He may have thought, why this nonsense? Why go on talking? Nothing is conveyed. Nothing is understood. Why go on knocking your head against the wall? People are deaf. They cannot understand. He must have been restless when Buddha was talking. For the first time, he was at home. He could understand what silence is. And then everybody was restless. Thousands were there. Then he couldn't contain. Looking at the foolishness of the crowd, that they were at ease when Buddha was talking. Now they are restless when Buddha is silent. When something can be delivered, they are not open. When nothing could be delivered, they were waiting. Now through silence, Buddha can give something which is immortal, but they cannot understand. So he couldn't contain and laughed loudly. He laughed at the whole situation. The whole absurdity. We require even of a Buddha to talk, because that's all we can understand. This is foolish. You should learn to be silent with a Buddha, because only then he can enter you. Through words, he can knock at your door, but can never enter. Through silence, he can enter in you. And unless he enters, nothing will happen to you. His entry will bring a new element to your world. His entry into the heart will give you a new beat and a new pulse. A new release of life, but only his entry. Mahakashyap laughed at the foolishness of man. They are restless and they are thinking, when Buddha stands up and this whole silence is dark, so we can go home. He laughed. Laughter started with Mahakashyap. And it has been going on and on in Zen tradition. There is no other tradition which can laugh, because laughter looks so irreligious. profane. You cannot think Jesus laughing. You cannot think Mahavir laughing. Looks difficult even to conceive that Mahavir having a belly laugh, or Jesus laughing uproariously. No, laughter has been denied. Sadness somehow has become religious. One of the famous German thinkers, Count Kesselring, has written that health is irreligious. Illness has a religiousness about it, because an ill person is sad, desireless. Not that he has become desireless, but because he is weak. Healthy person will laugh, would like to enjoy, would be merry. He cannot be sad. So religious persons have tried in many ways to make you ill. Go on a fast, suppress your body, torture yourself, you will become sad, suicidal, crucified on your own. How can you laugh? Laughter comes out of health. It is an overflowing energy. That's why children can laugh, and their laughter is total. Their whole body is involved in it. When they laugh, you can see their toes are laughing. The whole body, the every cell, the every fiber of the body is laughing and vibrating. They are so full of health, so vital. Everything is flowing. A sad child means an ill child. And a laughing old man means he is still young. Even death cannot make him old. Nothing can make him old. His energy is still flowing and overflowing. He is always flooded. Laughter is a flooding of energy. In Zen monasteries, they have been laughing and laughing and laughing. Laughter became prayer only in Zen, because Mahakashyap started it. 25 centuries before, a morning just like this, and Mahakashyap started a new trend, absolutely new, unknown to the religious mind before. He laughed. Laughed at the whole foolishness, the whole stupidity. And Buddha didn't condemn him. Rather, on the contrary, he called him near, gave him the flower and said to the crowd, because when the crowd heard the laughter, then people must have thought this man has gone mad. Or, this man is irrespectful to Buddha, because how can you laugh before a Buddha? When Buddha is sitting silently, how can you laugh? This man is not paying respect. Mind will say that this is irrespect. Mind has its own rules. Heart does not know them. Heart has its own rules. Mind has never heard about them. The heart can laugh and be respectful. The mind cannot laugh. It can only be said and then be respectful. But what type of respect is this which cannot laugh? A very new trend entered with Mahakashyap's laughter. Down the centuries, The laughter has continued. Only Zen masters, Zen disciples laugh. All over the world, all religions have become ill because sadness has become so prominent. And temples and churches look like graveyards. They don't look festive. They don't give a sense of celebration. If you enter a church, what you see there? Not life, but death. And Jesus crucified on the cross completes the whole sadness there. Can you laugh in a church, dance in a church, sing in a church? Yeah, singing is there, but that is sad. And people sit with long faces. No wonder that nobody wants to go to the church. It is a social duty to be fulfilled. No wonder nobody is attracted to the church. It is a formality. Religion becomes a Sunday thing. For 1 hour you can tolerate to be sad. Mahakashyap laughed before Buddha. And since then, Zen monks, sannyasins, masters have been doing such things which religious mind, so-called religious mind, cannot even conceive. If you have seen any Zen book, you may have seen Zen masters depicted, pictured, painted. No painting is true. If you look at Bodhidharma's painting or Mahakashyap's painting, they are not true to Mahakashyap's face. But just looking at them, you will have a feeling of laughter. They are hilarious. They are ridiculous. Look at Bodhidharma's painting. He must have been one of the most beautiful men. Otherwise, it is not possible. Because whenever a man becomes enlightened, a beauty descends. A beauty which comes from the beyond. A blessing comes to his whole being. But look at Bodhidharma's painting. He looks ferocious and dangerous. He looks so dangerous that you will become scared if he comes to visit you in the night. Never again in your life you will be able to sleep. Looks so dangerous that he is going to kill you. Just disciples laughing with the master, creating a ridiculous portrait. It looks like a cartoon. All Zen masters are depicted in a ridiculous way. Disciples enjoy it, but they carry a quality. Bodhidharma is dangerous. If you go to him, he will kill you. Then you cannot escape him. He will follow you and haunt you. Wherever you go, he will be there. Unless he kills you, he cannot leave you. That is the thing depicted. All the Zen masters, even Buddha, if you look at Japanese paintings of Buddha and Chinese, they don't look like the Indian Buddha. They have totally changed. If you look at Indian paintings of Buddha, his body is proportionate, as it should be. A prince Then a Buddha, a beautiful man, perfect proportion. But look at a Japanese painting of Buddha. They have distorted the whole thing. A big belly. Buddha never had a big belly. He never had a big belly. But in Japanese paintings, scriptures, he is painted with a big belly. Because a man who laughs must have a big belly. And a belly laughter. How can you do it with a small belly? You cannot do it. They are joking with Buddha also. And they have said such things about Buddha. Only very deep love can do that. Otherwise it looks insulting. Bhakti said to his disciples, always insisted, he had always a painting of Buddha just behind him. And talking to his disciples, he will say, look at this fellow. Wherever you meet him, kill him immediately. Don't give him a chance. Meditating, he will come to disturb. Whenever you see in meditation his face, just kill him then and there, otherwise he will follow you. And Bhakti used to say, look at this fellow. If you repeat his name, because Buddhists go on repeating Namo Buddhaya, Namo Buddhaya. If you repeat his name, then go and wash your mouth. Looks insulting. Buddha's name. And this man says, if you repeat, then first thing is to do is to wash your mouth. Your mouth has become dirty. And he is right. Because words are words. Whether it is a name of Buddha or not makes no difference. Whenever a word crosses your mind, it has become dirty. Wash it. Even Buddha's name. And this man, keeping the portrait always behind, and every morning he will bow down. So his disciples ask, what are you doing? You go on telling to us, kill this man, don't allow him to stand in the way. And you say, don't take his name, don't repeat. If it comes, wash your mouth. And we say, you're bowing down. So Bhakti says, all this has been taught to me by this man, this fellow. Just so I have to pay respect. Mahakashyap laughed. This laughter carries many dimensions in it. One, at the foolishness of the whole situation. A Buddha silent and nobody understanding him. And everybody expecting Buddha to speak. And the whole life Buddha has been telling that the truth cannot be spoken. And still, everybody expecting him to speak. The second dimension, he laughed at Buddha also. At the whole dramatic situation he has created, sitting there with a flower in his hand and looking at the flower and creating so uneasiness, restlessness in everybody. To this dramatic gesture of Buddha he laughed. And he laughed the third dimension at his own self. Why couldn't I understand up to now? The whole thing is easy and simple. The day you will understand, you will laugh. Because there was nothing to be understood. There was no riddle to be solved. Everything has always been simple and clear. how you could miss it. Buddha sitting silent, birds singing in the trees, breeze passing through the trees, everybody restless, and Mahakashyap understood. What he understood? He understood that there is nothing to be understood, there is nothing to be said, there is nothing to be explained. The whole situation is simple and transparent. Nothing is hidden in it. And there is no need to search. Because all that is here and now within you. He laughed at his own self also, at the whole absurd effort of many lives. Just to understand this silence, so much thinking. Buddha called him, gave him the flower and said, "Hereby I give you the key." What is the key? Silence and laughter is the key. Silence within, laughter without. And when laughter comes out of silence, it is not of this world. It is divine. When laughter comes out of thinking, it is ugly. It belongs to this ordinary mundane world. It is not cosmic. Then you are laughing at somebody else, at somebody else's caste. It is ugly and violent. When laughter comes out of silence, you are not laughing at anybody's caste. You are simply laughing at the whole cosmic joke. It is really a joke. That's why I go on telling jokes to you. Because jokes carry more than any scripture. It is a joke. Because inside you, you have everything and you are searching everywhere. What else a joke should be? You are the king. And acting like a beggar on the street. Not only acting, not only deceiving others, but you have deceived yourself that you are a beggar. You have the source of all knowledge and asking questions. You have the knowing self and thinking that you are ignorant. You have the deathless within you and afraid and fearful of death and disease. This is really a joke. And if Mahakashyap laughed, he did well. But except Buddha, nobody understood. He accepted the laughter. Immediately he realized Mahakashyap has attained. The quality of that laughter was cosmic. He understood the whole joke of the situation. There was nothing else to it. The whole thing as if the divine is playing hide and seek with you. Others thought that this Mahakashyap is a fool laughing in front of Buddha. And Buddha thought this man has become wise. Now, fools have always a subtle wisdom in them. And the wise always acts like a fool. in the old days, all great emperors had always one fool in their court. Many wise men, counselors, ministers, prime ministers, but one fool always. All the intelligent, wise emperors all over the world, in the east, in the west, they had a court joker, a fool. Why? Because there are things the so-called wise men will not be able to understand. Only a foolish man can understand. Because your so-called wise are so foolish, their cunningness and cleverness closes their mind. A fool is a simple one. And a fool was needed because many times the so-called wise will not say something, afraid of the emperor. The fool is not afraid of anybody else. He will say, whatsoever the consequence. A fool is a man who will not think of the consequence. That's what Krishna is saying to Arjuna, be a fool. Don't think of the consequence and the result. Act. This is how fools act. They simply act without thinking what is going to happen. What will be the result? A clever man always thinks first of the result, then he acts. Thought comes first, then action. A foolish man acts, thought never comes first. Whenever someone realizes the ultimate, he is not like your wise man. He cannot be. He may be like your fools, but he cannot be like your wise men. When Saint Francis became enlightened, he used to call himself God's fool. The Pope was a wise man. And when Saint Francis came to see the Pope, even the Pope thought this man has gone mad. He was intelligent, calculating, clever. Otherwise, how he can become a pope? Because to become a pope, one has to pass through much politics. To become a pope, saintliness is not needed. Cunningness is needed. Cleverness is needed. Diplomacy is needed. A competitive aggression is needed. To put others aside, to force your way, to use others as ladders and then throw them. It is a politics, because Pope is a political head. Religion is secondary, or none at all. He may be a theologian, but he is not religious, because how a religious man can compete? And how a religious man can fight and be aggressive for a post? Only politicians. Saint Francis came to see the Pope. Pope thought this man is a fool. But trees and words and faces thought in a different way. When Saint Francis will go to the river, the faces will jump in celebration that Francis has come. Thousands witness this phenomena. Millions of fishes will jump simultaneously. The whole river will be last jumping fishes. Saint Francis was there and fishes were happy. Wherever he will go, words will follow. They will come and sit on his head, on his body, in his lap. They understood this fool better than the Pope. Even trees which have become dry and were going to die, if Saint Francis will come near, they will become green, they will again blossom. These trees understood well that this fool is no ordinary fool. He is God's fool. Mahakashyap laughed, he was a God's fool. Buddha understood him because Buddha was not a pope. Later on, Buddhist priests didn't understand him. They dropped the whole anecdote. I was talking in a Buddhist community once, the neo-Buddhists, so I told this anecdote. The priest came to me later on and he said, "From where you have got this? Because this is not written in the scriptures. This is false. And a man like you should not say such a thing which is not written in the scriptures. Because people believe you." So I told him, "You bring your scripture, I will add this anecdote in it. And I will sign on my own authority." I said, "This happened. I was a witness there." The priest looked at me. He must have thought this man is mad and no use talking. I told that priest that I have no power, but I have authority. Power belongs to the politician, authority to the religious man. Power depends on others. They give it to you. Authority comes from within. So I told him I was a witness and I can give you in written with my sign that I was a witness, this happened. You have somehow missed in the scriptures, but I am not at a fault for that. I am not responsible if you have missed this in your scriptures." The man, the priest, used to come to me before, he stopped coming. He never came again. A dead scripture is more important to a priest than a live person. And even if I say I am a witness, I cannot be believed. This anecdote has been dropped from Buddhist scriptures because it is sacrilegious to laugh before Buddha. And to make it the original source of a great tradition is not good. This will not be a good precedent that a man laughed before Buddha. And this will also be not a good thing that Buddha gave the key to this man, not to Sariputra, Ananda, Moggallana, and others who were more important, significant. And finally they recorded the scripture. Sariputra, Moggallana, Ananda, they recorded the scripture. Mahakashyap was never asked, and even if they had asked, he would not have answered. Mahakashyap was never consulted that had he something to say to be recorded. When Buddha died, all the monks gathered and they started recording what happened and what not. Nobody asked Mahakashyap. This man must have been discarded by the Sangha, by the community. The whole community must have felt jealous. The key has been given to this man who is not known at all, not a scholar, not a great pundit. Nobody knew him before. Suddenly, that morning, he became the most significant man. Because of the laughter, because of the silence, and in a way it is right, because how can you record silence? You can record words. You can record that happened in the visible. How can you record that has not happened in the visible? They knew the flower has been given to Mahakashyap. Nothing else. But the flower was just a container. It had something in it. The Buddhahood, the touch of Buddha's inner being, the fragrance. That cannot be seen, that cannot be recorded, and the whole thing seems as if it never happened, or it happened in a dream. And those who were the recorders were the men of words, proficient in verbal communication, talking, discussing, arguing. Mahakashyap is never heard again. This is the only thing known about Mahakashyap. Such a small thing, scriptures must have missed it. Then Mahakashyap has remained silent. Silently the river has been flowing. To others the key was given. The key is still alive, it still opens the door. These two are the parts of it, a inner silence, a deep silence, so that there is no vibration in your being. You are, but there are no waves. You are just a pool without waves. Not a single wave arises. The whole being silent, still. Inside, at the center, silence, and on the periphery, celebration and laughter. And only silence can laugh, because only silence can understand the cosmic joke. So your life becomes a vital celebration. Your relationship becomes a festive thing. Whatsoever you do, every moment is a festival. You eat, and eating becomes a celebration. You take a bath, and bath becomes a celebration. You talk, and talking becomes a celebration. Relationship becomes a celebration. Your outer life becomes festive. There is no sadness in it. How can sadness exist with silence? But ordinarily you think otherwise. You think if you are silent, you will be sad. Ordinarily you think how you can avoid sadness if you are silent. And I tell you, the silence that exists with sadness cannot be true. Something has gone wrong. You have missed the path. You are off the track. Only celebration can give the proof that the real silence has happened. What is the difference between a real silence and a false? A false silence is always forced. Through effort it is achieved. It is not spontaneous. It has not happened to you. You have made it happen. You are sitting silently. Much inner turmoil is there. You suppress it. Then you cannot laugh. You will become sad. Because laughter will be dangerous. If you laugh, you will lose silence. Because in laughter you cannot suppress. Laughter is against suppression. If you want to separate, you should not laugh. If you laugh, everything will come out. The real will come out in laughter and the unreal will be lost. So whenever you see a saint sad, know well. The silence is false. He cannot laugh. He cannot enjoy because he is afraid. If he laughs, then everything will be broken. The suppression will come out. Then he will not be able to suppress it. Look at small children. Guests have come to your home. and you tell them don't laugh, what they do? They close their mouth, they suppress their breath, because if they don't suppress their breath, the laughter will come out and it will be difficult. They don't look anywhere, because if they look and something and they forget. So they close their eyes, or almost close their eyes, and they suppress their breath. If you suppress, your breath cannot be deep. And laughter needs a deep breath. If you laugh, a deep breath will be released. That's why nobody is breathing deeply, shallow breathing, because much has been suppressed in your childhood and after it. So you cannot breathe deeply. If you go deeper, you become afraid. Sex has been suppressed through breath. Laughter has been suppressed through breath. Anger has been suppressed through breath. Breath is a mechanism to suppress or release. Hence my insistence for chaotic breathing. Because if you breathe chaotically, then laughter is screaming, everything will come up, and your all suppression will be thrown out. It cannot be thrown out in another way, because breathe is the way you have suppressed it. Try anything to suppress, what you will do? You will not breathe deeply. Shallow breathing, just from the upper part of the lungs, you will breathe. You will not go deeper, because deeper it is suppressed. In the belly is everything suppressed. So when you really laugh, the belly vibrates. Hence Buddha's big-bellied portraits. The belly is relaxed. The stomach is not then a suppressed reservoir. If you see a sin and sadness is there, but sin is not there. He has stilled himself somehow, and he is every moment afraid. Anything can disturb. Nothing can disturb if real silence has happened. Then everything helps it to grow. If you are really silent, you can sit in a market. Even the market cannot disturb it. Rather, you feed on the noise of the market, and that noise becomes more silence in you. Really, to feel silence, a market is needed, if you have real silence. Because then the market becomes the background, and the silence comes perfect in contrast. You can feel the inner silence bubbling against the market. There is no need to go to the Himalayas. And if you go, what you will see? Against the silence of the Himalayas, your mind will be chattering. Then you will feel more chattering, because the background is in the silence. The background is the silence. You will feel more chattering. If the real happens to you, you are unafraid. It cannot be taken away. Nothing can disturb it. And when I say nothing, I mean nothing. Nothing can disturb it. And if something disturbs, it is forced, cultivated. Somehow you have managed it. But a managed silence is not a silence. It is just like managed love. But the world is so mad. And the parents and the teachers and the moralists are so mad in insane that they teach children to love. Mothers say to their children, I am your mother, love me. As if the child can do something to love. What the child can do to? The husband goes on saying to the wife, I am your husband, love me. As if love is a duty. As if love is something which can be done. Nothing can be done. Only one thing can be done. You can pretend. And once you learn how to pretend love, you have missed. The whole life will go wrong. Then you will go on pretending that you love. Then you will smile and pretend. Then you will laugh and pretend. Then everything is false. Then you will sit silent and pretend. Then you will meditate and pretend. And pretension becomes the style of your life. Don't pretend. Let the real come out. And if you can wait and be patient enough, when pretensions have dropped, the real is waiting there to explode. Catharsis is to drop the pretensions. Don't look at the other what he is saying, because that is how you have pretended. You have been pretending. You cannot love. Either it is there or not. But the mother says, because I am your mother. The father says, I am your father. The teacher says, I am your teacher. Therefore, love. As if love is a logical thing. Therefore, I am your mother. Therefore, love. What the child will do? You are creating such problems for the child. He cannot even conceive. What can he do? He can pretend. He can say, yes, I love. And once the child loves his mother as a duty, he will become incapable of loving any woman. Then the wife will come and it will be a duty. Then the children will come and it will be a duty. Then the whole life has become duty. It cannot be a celebration. He cannot laugh. He cannot enjoy it. It is a burden to be carried. This is what has happened to you. A misfortune. But if you understand it, you can drop it. This is the key. The inner part of the key is silence, and the outer part of the key is celebration, laughter. Be festive and silent. Create more and more possibility around you. Don't force the inner to be silent. Just create more and more possibility around you so that the inner silence can flower in it. That's all we can do. We can put the seed in the soil. We cannot force the plant to come out. We can create the situation. We can protect. We can give fertilizer to the soil. We can water. We can say whether the sun rays reach or not, or how much sun rays are needed, too much or too less. We can avoid dangers and wait in a prayerful mood. We cannot do anything else. Only the situation can be created. That's what I mean when I tell you to meditate. Meditation is just a situation. Silence is not going to be the consequence of it. No. Meditation is just creating the soil, the surrounding, preparing the ground. And then the seed is there. It is always there. You need not put the seed. Seed has always been with you. That seed is Brahma. That seed is Atma. That seed is you. Just create the situation and the seed will become alive. It will sprout and a plant is born. And you start growing. Meditation doesn't lead you to silence. Meditation only creates the situation in which the silence happens. And this should be the criterion, that whenever silence happens, laughter will come to your life. A vital celebration will happen all around. You will not become sad. You will not become depressed. You will not escape from the world. You will be here in this world, but taking the whole thing as a game, enjoying the whole thing as a beautiful game, a big drama. No more serious about it. Seriousness is disease. Buddha must have known Mahakashyap. He must have known when he was looking at the flower silently and everybody was restless. He must have known only one being was there, Mahakashyap, who was not restless. Buddha must have felt the silence coming from Mahakashyap, but he will not call him. When he laughed, then he called him and gave the flower. Why? Silence is only the half. Mahakashyap would have missed if he had remained simply silent and didn't laugh. Then the key was not going to be given to him. He was only half grown. He was not yet a fully grown tree. He was not blossoming. The tree was there, but flowers have not yet come. Buddha waited. Now I tell you, why Buddha had to wait for so many minutes, for 1 or 2 or 3 hours? He waited. Mahakashyap was silent, but he was trying to contain laughter. He was trying to control laughter. He was trying not to laugh, because it will be so unmannerly. What Buddha will think? What others will think? But the story says, then he couldn't contain any more. The silence became too much. It had to come out as a laughter. The flood became too much. He couldn't contain it anymore. When silence is too much, it becomes laughter. It is so overflooded. It starts overflowing to all the directions. He laughed. It must have been a mad laughter. In that laughter, there was no Mahakashyap. Silence was laughing. Silence has come to blossoming. Then immediately Buddha called him, Mahakashyap, take this flower. And this is a key. And I have given to all else what can be given in words. And to you I give that which cannot be given in words. The message beyond words, the most essential, I give it to you. Buddha waited for those hours so that Mahakashyap's silence becomes overflooded. It becomes a laughter. Your enlightenment is perfect only when silence has come to become a celebration. Hence my insistence that after you meditate, you must celebrate. After you have been silent, you must enjoy it. You must have a thanksgiving. A deep gratitude must be sown towards the whole. Just for the opportunity that you are, that you can meditate, that you can be silent, that you can laugh. Anything more?
You said that Buddha had many enlightened people around him, and yet he does something special to this one enlightened person. Is there something different between enlightened people?
Yes. Buddha had many enlightened persons around. But the key can be given to only such a person who can become a master in his own right. Because the key is to be delivered on and on. It has to be kept alive. It is not going to become a treasure for Mahakashyap. It is a great responsibility. It has to be given to somebody else. There were other enlightened persons, but the key cannot be given to them. the key will be lost with them. And really, Buddha chose the right person because the key is still alive. Mahakashyap did well. He could find another person who will transmit it to somebody else. The question is to find the right person. Just enlightened is not enough, because all enlightened persons are not masters. A distinction has to be made. Jains have a beautiful distinction. They have two types of enlightened persons. One enlightened person is known as Kevali, one who has attained to absolute loneliness. He has become perfect. But he cannot be a teacher. He cannot give this perfection to somebody else. He is not a master. He cannot guide. He himself has become an ultimate peak. But whatsoever he knows, he cannot transmit it in any way. Then another type of enlightened person is called Tirthankara, one who becomes a vehicle for others. He is enlightened, but he is also a master of a certain art of communicating through words and communicating through silence. He can deliver the message. Others can become enlightened through him. Whatsoever can be said by words, Buddha says, I have told you. That which cannot be said by words, I give it to Mahakashyap. He was a master of silence. Through his silence, he can teach. Others were masters of words. Through their words they can teach and carry on the work. It is not so essential. It is on the periphery, but that too is needed, because Buddha's words have to be recorded. What Buddha did has to be recorded and transferred from generation to generation. That too is essential. But that exists on the periphery. His scholars, Modgalayan, Sariputra, Anand, they will record everything. That is a treasure, because Buddhas rarely happen. All should be recorded, not a single word should be left, because who knows, that single word may become enlightenment to someone. But their silence has also to be carried. So two traditions, the tradition of the scriptures and the tradition of silence. And then many people become enlightened, but the moment they become enlightened, they become so silent, they become so content, that not even to help others, the desire to help others arises in them. Jains say that a Tirthankara is a person who has gathered some karma. This is strange. Who has gathered some karma, and he has to fulfill those karma by conveying the message to others. It is not a very good thing. Karma is not a very good thing. In his past life, he has gathered karma to be a master. It is not a good thing, because something has to be done. Something has to be completed. And he must do it. Then his karmas are fulfilled. Then he is relieved completely. The desire to help others is still a desire. Compassion towards others is still energy moving towards others. All desires have disappeared, but one desire is there, to help others. That too is a desire. And unless this desire also disappears, this man will have to come back. So a master is one who has become enlightened, but one desire is left. That desire is not a trouble in becoming enlightened. To help others helps to become enlightened, but you will be still attached to the body. Only one is free. All sources cut, but one bridge is there. There were other enlightened persons. But the key could not be given to them. It had to be given to Mahakashyap. Because Mahakashyap had an inner desire to help his past karmas. He could become a Tirthankar. He could become a perfect master. And he did well. And Buddha's choice was perfectly right. Because there was another Buddha's disciple who could have been given the key. His name was Subhuti. He was as silent as Mahakashyap, even more. It will be difficult for you how silence can be more, how perfection can be more. But it is possible. But it is beyond ordinary arithmetic. You can be perfect and you can be even still more perfect. Because perfection has growth. It goes on growing infinitely. Subhuti was the most silent man around Buddha, even more than Mahakashyap. But the key could not be given to him because he was so silent. In the first place, he will not laugh. It will be difficult now. You are entering a very complex phenomenon. The key could not be given to him because he will not laugh. He was not there. He was so silent, he was not there to laugh. He was not there to contain or not to contain. And even if Buddha has called Subhuti come, he would not have come. Buddha would have to go to him. It is related of Subhuti that one day he was sitting under a tree and suddenly out of season, flowers started falling on him. So he opened his eyes. What was the matter? The tree was not in blossom. The season was not there. From where suddenly? And millions of flowers. So he looked. And then he saw many deities all around, over the tree in the sky, and dropping flowers. He will not ask even those deities what is the matter. He closed his eyes. Those deities said, Subhuti, we are thanking you for the sermon you have given on emptiness. Then Subhuti said, but I have not said a single word. And you say, we are thanking you on the sermon that you have given on emptiness. I have not spoken a single word. The deity said, you have not spoken, we have not heard. That is the perfect sermon on emptiness. He was so empty that the whole cosmos felt it. And gods had to come to shower flowers on it. This Subhuti was there. But he was so silent that he was not there. He was not even bothered. Why this Buddha is sitting with the flower? Mahakashyap. was, not like others, but still in a way. He looked at Buddha. He felt the silence. He felt the absurdity. But there was one who was feeling. Subhuti must have been there somewhere sitting. There arose no idea why this Buddha is sitting silently today. Why he is looking at the flower? Then there was no effort to contain it. Then there was no explosion. Subhuti was there as if absolutely absent. He will not laugh. And if Buddha had called, he would not have come. Buddha had to go to him. And no one knows. If the key was given to him, he may have thrown it. He was not a man meant to be a Tirthankara. He was not a man meant to be a teacher or a master. He had no past karmas. He was perfect. So perfect, whenever something is so perfect, it becomes useless. You remember? A person so perfect is useless because you cannot use to any purpose. Mahakashyapa was not so perfect. Something was lacking. He could be used. In that gap, the key could be put. The key was delivered to Mahakashyapa because he could be relied. He will deliver it to somebody else. Subhuti was not reliable. Perfection, when absolute. Just disappears. It is not there in the world. You can shower flowers on it, but you cannot use it. That's why many enlightened persons were there, but only one particular Mahakashyapa was chosen. He was the man who could be used for this great responsibility. This is strange. That's why I say ordinary arithmetic won't help, because you will think the key should be given to the most perfect. But the most perfect will forget where he has put the key. The key should be given to one who is almost perfect, just on the brink where one disappears. Before he disappears, he will hand over the key to somebody else. To the ignorant, the key cannot be given. To the most perfect, the key cannot be given. Someone has to be found who is just on the boundary, who is passing from this world of ignorance to that world of knowing, but just on the boundary. Before he crosses the boundary, this time can be used and the key can be delivered. To find a successor is very difficult, because the most perfect is useless. I will tell you one event that happened in this just recently. Ramakrishna was working on many disciples. Many attained, but nobody knows about them. People know about Vivekananda, who never attained. And the key was given to Vivekananda, who was not the most perfect, Not only he was not most perfect, Ramakrishna won't allow him to be perfect. And once Ramakrishna felt that Vivekananda is going to be and to enter into the perfect samadhi, he called Vivekananda and said, "Stop. And now I will keep the key with me for this final entry. And only before your death, 3 days before, the key will be returned to you." And only 3 days before Vivekananda died, he had a first taste of ecstasy, never before. Vivekananda started crying and weeping, and he said, "Why you are so cruel to me?" Ramakrishna said, "Something has to be done through you. You have to go to the west, to the world around. You have to give my message to people. Otherwise it will be lost." There were others, but they were already in. You cannot call them out. And they will not be interested in going to the west or to around the world, and they will say it is nonsense. They were just like Ramakrishna. Why he should not go himself? He was already in. And somebody has to be used who is out. But those who are far out cannot be used. Those who are almost in, just near the door, they can be used. And before they enter, they should deliver the key to somebody else. Mahakasya was just near the door, fresh, entering into silence, silence between celebration. And he had a desire to help. That desire has been used. Subhuti was impossible. He was the most perfect, most Buddha-like. But when someone is Buddha-like, he is useless. He can himself give the secret key. There is no need to give it to him. But he never made anybody a disciple. Subhuti lived in perfect emptiness. Guards had to shower on him many times, and he never made a disciple. He never said anything to anybody. Everything was so perfect. Why bother? Why say anything? A master is fulfilling his past karmas. He has to fulfill. When I have to find a successor, many will be there who will be like Subhutis. They cannot be given the key. Many will be there who will be like Sariputras. Only words can be given to them. Somebody has to be found who is entering silence, celebrating, and has been caught just near the door. That's why. Enough for today.